Mr. Slaughter, written by Robert R. McCammon and read by Eduardo Ballerini.
Part 1. The Monster's Tooth. Chapter 1. "Listen," said the October wind, as it swirled and swooped through the streets of New York. "I have a story to tell. About change in the weather and the weathers of men. Whether this one staggering past, the spindly gent, shall right himself against my onslaught before I take him to the wall, or whether that one there, with his prodigious belly, shall be fast enough to catch his tricorn as I throw it from his head. With a shove and a shriek I pass through the town, and what fast horse might ride me down?" "None," thought Matthew Corbett in reply. "To be sure, respect my comings and goings, and know that something unseen may prove a force no man may master." Of that Matthew was undeniably certain, for he was having one devil of a time holding on to his own tricorn and balancing himself against the blasts. It was near 8:30 on a Thursday night, this second week of October. The young man was on a mission. He had been told to be at the corner of Stone and Broad Streets at 8:30, and if he valued his hide, he would report as ordered. Hudson Greathouse, his associate and senior member of the Herald Agency, was in no mood these days to brook Matthew any easement concerning who was the boss and who was, well, it was true enough, the slave. But as Matthew continued his brisk battle south along Queen Street, with other citizens seemingly pushing against invisible walls in one direction, or flying like bundles of empty clothes past him in the other, he thought that Greathouse's harsh attitude of late had more to do with celebrity than slavery. After all, Matthew was famous.
"Your hat's getting a bit high, don't you think?"
Greathouse had often asked since the successful conclusion of the mystery concerning the Queen of Bedlam. "Yes," Matthew had answered, as calmly as possible, when faced with a human bull ready to charge any utterance that had the agitation of a red flag. "But I do wear it well." Which was not enough to make the bull charge, but enough to make it snort with ominous anticipation of future violence. The truth being, Matthew really was a celebrity. His exploits to determine the identity of the masker and his near demise at the Chapel Estate in the summer had given the town's printmaster, Marmaduke Grigsby, enough material for a barrage of earwigs that made the broadsheet even more popular than the Saturday night dogfights up at Peck's Wharf. The initial story, written right after the end of the episode in July, had been restrained and factual enough, due to High Constable Gardner Lillehorn's threats to set fire to the printing press. But after Marmaduke's granddaughter Berry had detailed her own part in the picture, the old news hound had nearly begun baying at the moon outside Matthew's residence, which was a refurbished dairy house just behind Grigsby's own home and print shop. Out of decorum and common sense, Matthew had resisted telling the particulars of the tale, but in time his defenses had been weakened and finally crushed. By the third week of September, the "untold story of our own Matthew Corbett's adventure with venomous villains and threat of a hideous death, part the first," was set in type, and the flames of industry and the Grigsby imagination had really started burning. Whereas one day Matthew was simply a young man of 23 who had risen by fate and circumstance from New York orphan to magistrate's clerk to an associate problem solver at the London-based Herald Agency, he was, by the following afternoon, being trailed by an ever-swelling mob of people who thrust upon him quills, inkpots, and earwigs so as to sign his name across the premier chapter of this adventure, which he hardly recognized anymore as being his own experience. It was apparent that whatever Marmaduke did not know for sure, he was certain to invent.